Hi there. My name is Dana Longenecker. I'm going to be talking to you today about does my child have too much anxiety, but I thought I'd do a quick introduction first. I was a homeschool mom for about 15 years, and I've been a homeschool evaluator for about 21 years. My husband, Joe, and I have been married for over 30 years, and he's just a great and terrific guy. We have three children. Our oldest went to Christian kindergarten. He is not neurotypical. And then we homeschooled him the whole way through. He will be walking in May for his law degree from Harvard Law. Our second, our daughter Hannah, we homeschooled her the whole way through. And she is wrapping up her doctorate in psychology from Wheaton. And Wheaton is where she met her lovely husband and our son-in-law, Ashton. And he too is working on his doctorate in psychology. And our youngest, Emma, she was homeschooled through ninth grade, and then in 10th grade, she went to a local Christian school because she's kind of a little bit more like our puppy. She needed lots of people, and she also wanted to play soccer. So she played soccer in college at Lebanon Valley, and she spent the last year living in Pittsburgh, and she's moving back to start her master's degree in psychology at Millersville. So that's all really pretty exciting for us. But let's go ahead and jump in. So today we're going to be talking about a variety of things with anxiety. But number one was like, let's start with like, okay, so how do we explain anxiety? What is anxiety? Okay, so we all have worry, but these are different. Feelings of anxiety last longer, they're stronger, and they're not just like the normal feelings of worries that kids might have. You need to think of it like as the fight or flight mechanism in your brain is overreactive or it's stuck on. You know, that's part of what God has gifted us with. We have a physiological reaction to things where we either fight, flight, freeze, or we can actually fold. What plays into this is this thing called the amygdala hijack. So the amygdala hijack is part of the amygdala in your brain is the part of this, like, think of it as a really bad Google search engine. And it kind of remembers anything that could be considered dangerous. God gave us that so we didn't have to have time to think about things. So back in the day when we were hunting, and we had to quickly decide, does this animal eat me or do I eat it? So we need to decide that pretty quickly to survive, okay? So that's kind of what happens with the amygdala hijack and with it being stuck on. This immediate response with our children, you need to understand, and for us, it's immediate, like it's just happens. I like to use the example of when I was growing up, one of the houses we lived in, there were a lot of mice. I'm older, you know, I have kids, I'm in my own house, and our hamster Fluffy got loose, and I knew she was loose, but I saw this thing crawling along the baseboard, and my amygdala immediately, I jumped up on the counter and started screaming, which I don't do normally. And so while I'm doing that, I'm reacting about 12 seconds later, because that's how long it takes the same information to reach your higher level thinking skills. About 12 seconds later, my brain goes, hey, you know what? That's Fluffy. Fluffy's probably hungry and needs some water. You should jump down and get her. But I was still having the physiological response. Now imagine that happening multiple times over and over and over again all day for your child. It's hard. They're stuck. When I talk about being stuck, what I like to do is I like to give people, but you'll need to imagine a Chinese finger pull where you put both of your index fingers in each end and then you pull and your fingers get trapped. So if you can imagine like that stuckness, like it's hard to do anything. If I handed you scissors, you wouldn't really be able to cut. So that's a kind of how their brain gets. It gets stuck, right? The other way to think of it too is that with anxiety, anxiety has this really terrible thing it does. It tells people and children that if they just keep thinking about the same thing over and over and over again, that eventually they'll come up with a new solution or they'll feel better by thinking about it a lot. But that's not true. Think of a hamster on a wheel. Hamsters burning lots of energy, burning, 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 getting nowhere. That's kind of what happens too with anxiety. When I'm talking to people about anxiety, I like to use my puppets. I have two puppets. One is this beautiful, cute little dragon puppet. He's just adorable. And I sit him on my shoulder and I say, this is what anxiety looks like when it first shows up. It's not too bad. It's not too imposing. The problem with anxiety is every time you give into it, it gets a little bigger. So at first, it may sit on your kid's shoulder and it might be like, just to give you an example, hey, you know what? You shouldn't go to co-op today. You know why you shouldn't go to co-op today? Because nobody's going to talk to you at co-op. And so you're going to be all alone. So you shouldn't go to co-op today. Well, the problem is if the child actually does give in, it makes anxiety a little bigger because immediately what happens is they, oh, I didn't go to co-op. I feel so much relief. But the problem is, as soon as they don't go, anxiety shows back up and it says, hey, hey, you know what? You're not at co-op. Everybody's talking about you at co-op, or something along those lines. So then I grab another puppet and I put it on my other shoulder. And this is a big black dragon puppet. And this is what happens when we continue to give in to anxiety. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's why, like, when we're talking with kids, especially, like, when we can catch it when it's a little tiny thing, it's a lot easier than trying to work with something that's bigger and more aggressive. So I hope that helps you to kind of conceptualize what we're talking about. The other thing you need to understand is that anxiety likes to torture everybody, but in this instance, we're talking about children, about any mistakes they've made in the past. It wants to steal their present and rob their future. It is not kind as it's yammering in their head. The other thing about anxiety, it never says, oh my gosh, you were right. Look, you went to co-op and everybody did talk to you. It never says that. It goes silent. However, if it's proven right at all, it shows up immediately and says, see, see, nobody talked to you today at co-op. So that's how it's kind of insidious as it talks to our children. The other thing to conceptualize anxiety is it tells our children that they have more control over things than they actually do. What I like to do is I like to get a hula hoop. And if you can imagine laying the hula hoop on the ground, it's a small hula hoop. And I ask people to step into it. I use this with teens and adults too. And I say, hey, that's what you have control of. In that hula hoop, that's just you. That's it. You have control of you and your thoughts and your actions, but you have no control over the future, the past, the present, other people, other people's emotions. The anxiety lies to them and tells them that. Because one of the things you're going to hear me say a lot is that anxiety lies, and it lies all the time, okay? So it may lie to them in such a way that tells them they have control over something they don't. Like maybe it'll say, if you can imagine they have a cup in their hand and they sit it down and anxiety says, you know what? If you place it just this way, if you do that, then something bad won't happen. Or if you don't put it down the right way, something bad will happen. See, anxiety kind of has this twist on what children actually have control over. The other thing with kids and everyone, adults too, is that what our kids think about is what they feel emotionally. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to pause for a minute where you are, and I want you to think about something that happened in your childhood that was really, really embarrassing. Go ahead, think about it. Okay, great. What do you notice? You're noticing, you're feeling, you're feeling the embarrassment, maybe you're feeling the heat. It doesn't feel good. Now I want you to think of a good memory, maybe the first time you held your child in your arms. Okay, I want you to just think about that for a minute. You're feeling that, right? So what we think about is what we feel emotionally, okay? So it's really important as we move forward, we'll talk a little bit more about, hey, you know, what you're thinking about is what you're experiencing emotionally. So the question people say to me is, well, how do I discern if my child has too much anxiety? So excessive worry over a variety of topics and activities is really going to start telling you, hey, this anxiety is getting a little big. It's getting big. And with anxiety that's like there's too much of it, there's usually no specific threat. And the worry is out of line with the potential for risk. Like it doesn't line up for what's really going to happen in the world. They're also going to find that they spend a lot of time worrying about these things. And if it's too much anxiety, you're also going to find that it shifts. Like one day it might be okay for this thing, but the next day it might not be okay. And it can shift from topic to topic too. So it can be pretty tricky. And they will be worrying about things that might happen or will happen. And they will extrapolate out into the worst possible scenario. So if dad is late for work, then dad has been killed in an accident. They're alone and they're going to be alone. And so in that moment, what they're experiencing is the grief and the loneliness of losing dad, which dad is stuck in traffic, but anxiety wants them to feel the pain of the loss. So those are really some pretty good indications that your child is struggling with too much anxiety. Another thing is you're going to see some issues with their cognitive abilities, their thinking skills. You're going to see that it is hard for them to carry out tasks and follow through on responsibilities. They are going to be distracted. One of the things we know about anxiety when it's ramped up, it really does interfere with our immediate to short-term to long-term memory transfer. Okay. And so that is going to be a problem. You can see that if a child is learning and their brain is anxious and you're trying to teach them something, it's going to have a hard time transferring over. And again, if you go back to the finger pull analogy, that thought is that picture in your mind, what you'll see is that, oh my gosh, their brain is stuck and really isn't available and isn't really able to comprehend and focus on what I'm saying. Another thing with the cognitive skills, what you might see is they might be doing some meaningless rituals to ease their feelings of anxiety. They might be counting things, or they might need to touch things. So you're going to be seeing things that are interrupting their life. And if they're interrupting your child's life, they're definitely impacting your life. It's also going to be harder to think. Like we were saying, it's harder for them to learn, but their brain will also go blank. That's just one of the things sometimes with anxiety, their brain will go blank. Another sign that they're probably struggling with too much anxiety is you're going to see relational signs. They're going to do a lot of really reassurance seeking from others, usually parents, and it is over the top. It's, what time do we leave for soccer? What time do we leave for soccer? And you keep answering and you keep talking to them, but the answer doesn't seem to be like, it doesn't seem to be soothing them. It's almost like the answer and the question is doing something because they're anxious. Like, I guess what I'm saying is that the process of continually asking the same question and getting the same answer is somehow soothing to them. And if you're the parent, this reassurance seeking is really tough. You're going to find yourself a little annoyed or a lot annoyed and irritated. And that's not helpful, because when your child is dealing with too much anxiety and you're annoyed and irritated and frustrated, which is natural, it really makes it hard for either of you to make any type of real progress in fighting the anxiety. You also may see that how they feel about socializing or being in public might change. One of the things that some people will tell me with anxiety is that sometimes when they're really struggling with anxiety, it's almost like they can feel people looking at them, like their eyes feel like they're touching them, and they don't like to be out in public where people can look at them, or they don't like large groups. If your child is normally somebody, when you have people over, they want to socialize and they want to talk and they want to get involved. And then they're starting to like withdraw and they don't want to be a part of it. They just want to, you know, maybe go to their room. Those are some pretty good indications that maybe anxiety is too much. Of course, there are a lot of other things for that particular thing with a child withdrawing, but today we're just talking about anxiety. You're also going to see some physical signs with anxiety, and it differs obviously from child to child. One of the things that I always facetiously appreciate when I am doing a public speaking engagement is that I actually get to have a lot of these physical symptoms of anxiety. So your child actually does feel it in their body. They may sweat. They may feel like they want to throw up. They may actually get diarrhea. They're going to be antsy. They may get a dry mouth. Their tummies may hurt. Kids and tummy aches are really like, there is such a brain-gut connection for all of us, and our kids included, that if they're constantly complaining of tummy aches and their anxiety is high, it probably is time to like really start doing some positive work to help them cope better with the anxiety. You may see that they are dizzy and they have rapid breathing. The dizziness a lot of times comes because what happens when we get really anxious is we start breathing shallowly. So if you can even right now just take your rib cage in both your hands and squeeze it as hard as you possibly can and try to breathe, you're going to notice immediately that your breathing gets a little more shallow. Okay. And when that happens, you can let go. As that happens, the blood oxygen level in your brain drops. Okay. And then your brain takes that as an interpretation of, oh my gosh, something's dangerous happening. We should totally prepare for flight or fight. So then that actually will stimulate a response. They are going to have maybe increased muscle aches and soreness and growing pains. This won't apply for you guys, but for my clients whose children have school refusal, one of the things we will see a lot of times is they are going to the nurse with growing pains, and that's partly how they're expressing their anxiety in their bodies. They may tire more easily. They may be fatigued more easily. They're going to have probably some type of sleeping difficulties. It could be that they have trouble falling asleep. They could have trouble staying asleep. They can be restless at night and they can have unsatisfying sleep. Now, as parents, you and I both know that our kids need sleep or they're cranky. So you can imagine if they're already anxious and they're not getting enough sleep, how that just exacerbates their feelings of anxiousness. And the trouble with falling asleep is that once they lay down, a lot of times their brains start working. So I've had kids tell me, So when they lay down, they go, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about everything that's still plugged in the house. Like their lights plugged in and the stove's plugged in and their refrigerator's plugged in. And that could be really bad. And they just, their brain just goes through all the possible bad things that can happen, right? You're also going to see an edginess probably to them and a restlessness. Like they may be walking around the house a lot, but they're not actually doing anything constructive. Like they have that energy from anxiety, but they actually aren't able to direct themselves in a way that's like productive. They're also going to be irritable sometimes. The irritability is really tough to deal with. You're going to see that a lot in like your tweens and teens. They will express like their anxiety in not just being able to cope with they won't handle stressors well. Their resilience to stressors will not be good. And usually because you're the parent and you're the safe person, a lot of times the irritability comes out on you, which is hard for you to deal with. And one of the challenges of parenting a child with too much anxiety is that when they are emotionally dysregulated, they're losing their minds. It is really important for you to try to stay emotionally regulated. It will be a challenge. You will need the help of God, and you will need to maybe be praying in the moment, but you have got to stay as calm as you possibly can, okay? I know that's hard. You need to be praying for that. So how do I best help my child cope with this worry and anxiety? So if you're listening to this, you already know that you can't just say, get over it, because, oh my goodness, if they could just get over it, they would have. So this next part might be a little difficult in that it might challenge your theology a little bit, but I'm that's not my heart. I want you to listen and then decide how you want to handle this part as a family, okay? So one of the things that I deal with when people bring me Christian children or teenagers is a lot of times what I hear is, you know, hey, Dana, if I have anxiety, am I sinning? Am I not having enough faith? I don't understand what I'm doing wrong. Why doesn't God love me? Is he angry at me? See, we love our kids and we want them to understand the powerful word of God can change and heal and it's miraculous. And prayer can be incredibly helpful. But kids sometimes feel that if they've prayed and they're still struggling somehow, that they haven't had enough faith or they're not doing something right. So God acknowledges over and over in the Bible that we have anxiety. Key is what we do when we realize when we're worrying, okay? That's the key, and our kids need to understand that. They need to understand that. I think maybe what I need to say is, for some of them, they're angry with God for not healing them, and they don't understand why God didn't take this away. And we need to clarify with them that God can heal, and he will be with them even if he doesn't miraculously take away their anxiety. This is not an illustration I want you to use with your kids, especially your little people, but I'm always struck by the Bible story of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, how they're getting ready to throw them in the fire. And they say, you know, our God can save us from this, but even if he doesn't, he's still our God. He's still God in heaven. That is kind of the concept we want our kids to really know about God. You know, sometimes we don't like to point out like, hey, you know what? The Bible tells us that like all the books in the world can never hold all the miracles Jesus performed, but we know he did not heal everybody. And that's hard for us sometimes to tell our kids because we want them to know that God is this great, great God, but we want to present God in a way that shows them that he is with them, right? And sometimes I think we maybe want to boost God's creds, you know, kind of like, you know, he doesn't need that from us. He is great and powerful, and he loves your child more than you could possibly love him. Okay. So this is what I really want you to consider of how you want to approach what God tells us about anxiety. Next thing I love in the Bible is I like to say that God is the best and first cognitive behavioral therapist. My goodness, I love Philippians 4:8. So I'm just going to read you my version that I like. Okay. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellent or if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. Wow, that's what all the science is telling us. God wants us to focus on the positives. He's telling us, I love there's another verse, I'm not going to remember where it's at, guys, but for the mindset on the flesh is death, but the mindset on the spirit is life and peace. Okay. The hardship is when we just tell our kids that have anxiety, we just tell them, think about the positive. It feels to them like we're discounting the reality of what they're struggling with. Okay. So we want to acknowledge that they are struggling with things. One of the ways to conceptualize what it's like with somebody with too much anxiety or even depression is if you imagine the Velcro strips with a jaggy hook side, and you imagine taking a cotton ball and you just like roll it over those like little jaggy hooks, it's going to stick. And unfortunately, for somebody who's struggling with anxiety and depression or just anxiety, like the negative sticks. But the positive can be like in front of our children, there's like this glass, and it like the good like hits the glass and like runs down and pools at their feet. So rehearsing the positive is going to be really important. But we also have to honor the fact that they are struggling. So I like to tell parents to think of it in terms of the Psalms. Love the Psalms. Psalm 23:4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Oh my goodness. That sounds harsh. That sounds really scary and frightening. That is the reality. But the next part is the focusing on the truth part. I will fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. So the positives need to be rehearsed and reiterated to keep them in the forefront of their minds. The wiring, the negative sticks, and the positive fall away. And this is where you can be helpful, depending on your child's age, about helping them start to see the positives or making markers of God's faithfulness in their lives. So if they're younger, maybe you're writing it down for them and you're putting it in a jar, or you're making sticky notes and putting it on their wall. Like, what's something good that happened today? And so like, let's go back to my homeschool co-op thing. Hey, you went to co-op today. Did people talk to you? Yes. Okay. There you go. There, look, people talk to me when I go to co-op. It might sound silly to you, but it's really important that they can start rehearsing these, because when they're out of the moment, like when they're out of the moment and they're talking to you about things, that you can have good things stick. And we need those good things to stick, because when they get into a moment where the anxiety is taking over, when they're having maybe a panic attack, when they are emotionally dysregulated, it's going to be really hard to talk to them at that point. And we're hoping, and this does work and it does help over time, that these positives allow them to grab something and they can start telling themselves some truth. Okay? But you're not going to be able to teach them those positives while they're being emotionally dysregulated. It just won't work. If they're a little bit older, they may like a journal where they are writing down the good things that happen. I like to tell my clients who like to write to please get 2 journals. I tell them to get a journal where they write the good stuff, and then like a notebook where they write down the bad stuff. Because when you have a journal, when you write everything in the journal, do you remember how I keep saying like whatever you're thinking about, you're experiencing emotionally? So if they're reading through the journal and it's good, bad, good, bad, they're experiencing all those bad things again. We just want them reading back through the good. Actually, with the bad stuff, depending on their age and what's appropriate and supervision, I ask them to shred the pages, or if it's appropriate, to take them outside and burn them, because I want them to burn them and I want them to see the smoke going up, because I want it to be an illustration in their brain, a picture they can hold on to, that they're releasing it to God. They may need to do it multiple times with the same anxiety, but that's okay. That visual of like, I'm releasing it can be super, super helpful. It can also be helpful for some kids if you let them collect stones and write on the stones, so they can have a pile of stones that are a mark of God's faithfulness, kind of like what they did in the Old Testament. So you know your child best and know what will be the best way to encourage them. Ask them. They may have some great ideas too. So the other thing with having a child that may have too much anxiety is I'd really encourage you to consider seeing a doctor. There are a variety of things that can be causing anxiety within your child. And if these are things that are happening in their bodies with their biology, it really makes it hard to deal with the anxiety. Some of the things that maybe, you know, talking to your doctor is, it'd be like maybe Lyme disease and vitamin B deficiency and vitamin D deficiency, iron deficiency. Do they have inflammation? Are they dealing with any type of thyroid issues? Do they have food intolerances? And of course, under this too, like if they're having caffeine, that's probably not a good addition for a child with anxiety, because too much caffeine can really bring on what feels like a panic attack. But I want to go back and just go over this real quickly, because God designed our bodies to be very, very well tuned, and we need the nutrients in the proper amounts, and it really does affect how our kids' brains work. Okay, so I have permission to tell this story. I had a client, I've been working with her a while, she was a teenager. We could not get things to shift, and she was dealing with some really pretty intense anxiety. Couldn't get it to shift. And so I talked to her mom, and we agreed, and she went to the doctor, and the doctor agreed, and they did a vitamin B test on her, along with some other tests. But her vitamin B test came back at like a super low level, like at the level that people have when they're in nursing homes. And so that was getting in our way. So she started the vitamin B shots. I can't tell you, like, oh my gosh, it was a miracle, and immediately it started to work. But what I did find is that we started to be able to grab some traction in her treatment that we hadn't been able to have before. In terms of thinking about your children and too much anxiety, I really encourage people to just consider your family history. It doesn't have to be anything really complicated, but maybe quickly with you and your spouse, you sketch out like a family tree that shows, hey, do we have family members with depression and anxiety? Where are they? Like, are there aunts, are there cousins? It can be really helpful to say, hey, is anxiety something our family deals with? And that tree, if you go ahead and sketch it out, if you decide to go to the doctor, it can be really helpful for the doctor too to say, oh, okay, well, this is something maybe this family struggles with. The other thing with looking at children with too much anxiety is ask yourself, what is going on in our family and what is going on in the extended family? Our children are super, super sensitive. Sometimes families will come in and they'll tell me, oh, you know, our kids really don't know what's happening in our family. And I'll say, hey, I'm pretty sure if you brought me your four-year-old, they'd probably be able to get it pretty right about what's going on. Our kids are really, really aware of what's going on. So ask yourself, is there something going on in our family or our extended family that the kids maybe are hearing about, but no one's really talking about? So this is where you can really help your kids into the future just to succeed and thrive. One of the things we know in my field about families that struggle and that there are issues later is they usually have variations on three rules: don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. And I don't have time to go into all of those right now, but let's just talk about the don't talk rule. The don't talk rule, part of it sometimes is we don't talk about what's really happening in our family. I don't think families do this to be like, some families do, they do it to hide things, but just sit down and talk to the kids in age-appropriate ways about what's happening. For example, let's say you're having financial struggles and you and your spouse are just kind of quietly working that out. Sit down with them in an age-appropriate way, if you think that this might be adding to the anxiety, and tell them, hey, Mom and I are like, we are having a little bit of financial things right now, but we're working on it and it's going to be fine. And that's our jobs and we've got it. Most kids will be like, oh, okay. And they'll get up and skip away because you've told them that you've got it and you're going to take care of it. If they're seeing tension in the family, always speak truth. Okay. Sit them down, say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, Daddy and I are like, we're just having a little bit of argument, a little bit of trouble right now, but we're working on it. We're committed. We love each other. We're always going to be together. Again, you'll find most kids will just skip off because you've told them the truth. Now, please always make sure, especially relationally, you're telling the truth. If you need to say, hey, Mommy and I are not in agreement right now, but we're working on it, say that if you're not sure where things are going. My prayer is if you're listening to this, that God is moving in a mighty and powerful way in your relationships. The other thing that can really impact our children with too much anxiety is the news. How much news is your child exposed to? Our children don't always, depending on their age level, don't always have the ability to understand what is being said. They just understand the scariness. And a lot of news today can be doom and gloom, and our kids don't always have the ability to process that. And again, if you're constantly thinking about the doom and gloom and the possibilities of danger in the world, then you're going to be worried. And kids don't understand. When I was really little, I heard something. I was in the backseat of a car. I heard a radar report. I didn't understand it, didn't really ask anybody about it. But for the next couple of years, I always make sure I had lots and lots of blankets on my bed and stuffed animals to protect me, because I didn't understand. I was hearing things I didn't understand. Another part with today is the social media. I don't know how many of your kids have phones or other contact with media, and it can be really, really hard. Sometimes a media fast, even within your family where you're not You're not on Facebook. You're not on Instagram. You're not Snapchatting. Just put all those things, everything I could possibly say, and you're not involved in those. You're just doing life. Because the thing, especially with our tweens and teens, if they're on social media, they're always seeing pictures and they're always up to date. And they're like, oh my gosh, Susie and Mary got together and I wasn't invited. And so it can be a really hard thing. We don't always get invited to things, but if your child is dealing with too much anxiety, anxiety is going to go, see, people get together, they don't invite you, and they don't need that. The other thing too with social media and with phones and computers is that cyberbullying is a real problem. It is a real problem, so much so that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has called it a serious public health threat. So back in the day when I was in school, you know, I pretty much had to go to school to like experience my bully. Now, if your child is being bullied, the bully can reach them on their phones, in their houses, in their rooms. So being aware of that and how much contact they're having can be super, super important. All right. So anxiety, I've told you this, anxiety lies, and it lies all the time. And what we want to do is we want to help our children become seers of God's truth. I came up with this. Oh, isn't that funny? I can't even remember the right name. Acronym. That's S-E-E-R-S, SEERS, okay? It's positive coping skills. People come into me all the time and say, Dana, I don't want to do medication. I just want to like work on this. I want to work on this without meds. And I'll say, hey, that's great. Let's do the SEERS. Let's do these things and see if we can get it to turn around without medication or anything else. Because what this tells me a lot of times, if people can implement these things and get them moving, it tells me they have resiliency and they can get this to turn. If they're unable to implement any of this, it tells me that we're probably looking at something that's a little bit more severe. Maybe we need to process it a different way. So the first S in SEERS is sunshine. Sunshine is huge. Our kids need about 30 to 60 minutes a day out in the bright light. Like, yes, the sun bounces on their skin. Their bodies make vitamin D. Vitamin D is important for their brain to function well. The other thing that happens is when they're out in bright sunlight, the sunlight bounces into their eyes, hits the retina. The retina sends information up to their brain, and their brain makes other great brain chemicals. Now, if you're thinking, okay, well, it's really, you know, it's been really kind of cold. I totally get that. But try to have their like where they're doing their schooling during the day, like near windows that have sunshine coming in the winter. If there isn't sun in the room where you're working and your child has too much anxiety, try to move them to a room where they're getting sunshine. I know this can be really hard, especially in our areas, and you're all homeschool parents. So you know that in the Northern Hemisphere, the earth tilts away from the sun in the winter, and the rays of the sun have less energy, so they're not as warm and they're not as bright. So seasonal affective disorder is something that we can see in people in this area. So getting them out into the sun and getting them exposed to light is super, super important. It can really help with their anxiety. The first E in SEERS is eat healthy, drink water. Okay, so let's start with the water. I know we're talking about anxiety, but I think it's really important that you understand that dehydration can mimic depression. And the cognitive defects, you can actually, like, you can have thinking problems from being mildly dehydrated. So what we say is you need about half your body weight in ounces a day. So if you're 100 pounds, you want to go for 50 ounces. Some people love that. They like, there are bottles you can get that have the ounces you're drinking, and you can get apps that allow you to track your drinking water, how much water you've had. What I like to tell people, and it might be slightly crass, but go with me on this just for a moment. Except for when you get up in the morning, every other time you pee through the day, it should be clear. So if you're drinking enough water that your pee is clear, you're probably getting enough water, and your body needs that, and your brain needs that to function well. The food closer to natural is better. You know, our bodies, when we're struggling with anxiety and depression, can almost and somewhat feel like it's craving like sugar or carbs that our bodies can convert to sugar. Sometimes our brains actually respond to sugar in some ways, like it's kind of like a crack, like drug. So very few of us, when we get really stressed, go, oh my gosh, I so want a piece of celery. Most of us, we're honest, we're like, you know what? I want a cookie. So we eat the cookie and we have that sugar rush. And then just a little bit later, we die and we just go down. And so we have a sugar crash. So what do you want? Another cookie. So we go up again. And so this up and down is not good for our kids with too much anxiety. They need more stability in how they're doing emotionally. So that is really impacted by what they eat. So when I'm talking to adults, I always say, hey, you know what the goal is? Kind of try to eat around the outside of the grocery store. You know, obviously there's going to be things that you add to their diet that isn't like perfect, but as much as you can, try to make it a healthy diet for them. The next E in seers to become seers of God's truth is exercise. Exercise is really, really, really important. As homeschoolers, you probably have studied physical science, and you know that inertia tells us that an object at rest stays at rest, and an object in motion stays in motion. One of the things that's really tricky with anxiety and depression, they really do seem to want people to stop moving. Well, it wants them to stop doing a lot of things, but stop moving. And getting moving is super important if our kids are going to be fighting their anxiety. They need regular exercise. And you know what? Think about it. If they're regularly exercising outside and they have a bottle of water with them, you've hit three of the letters. So the regular exercise can also boost all their good brain chemicals, right? And we all know, just I know we're talking about anxiety, but exercise can treat mild to moderate depression as effectively as antidepressant medication. Exercise is really important. Here's the other thing. If you have your kid outside and they're running and they're exercising, they're also going to probably be sleeping a lot better too. And that's really going to help them be able to emotionally regulate. So I want you to think about maybe aiming for 30 to 60 minutes of physical activity. So what I tell people, and oh my goodness, please don't go and try to initiate all these at one time. Pick one thing and work on that for a while, and that'd add another thing. But what I tell people is when you're working in terms of this acronym, something is always better than nothing, okay? So if your child hasn't been exercising and you get them out for 5 minutes a day at first, woohoo, consider that a victory and continually try to build it up, okay? If your child is not outside exercising and you're like, okay, we're going outside and we're going to exercise for 60 minutes, it's probably not going to go well for you in the land, but you know your children and you know what's going to be best for them. Keep in mind that you should go outside with them. It's more fun to exercise and play games with other people. And simply taking the dog for a walk, if you haven't been exercising or they haven't been exercising, is a great way to get outdoors in the sunshine, get exercise, have relationship, and take a bottle of water. So the R is relationships. One of the things to help us become seers of truth is we need relationships. Our kids need relationships with people they can talk to, and build relationships with people that are caring and supportive. Our kids need a safe place and a safe person. Sometimes that's you. Hopefully it's you and your spouse and maybe grandma and an aunt or just people that love and care for your children and listen. I say this elsewhere in another place, but being listened to is so close to being loved, indistinguishable. Let me try again. Being listened to is so close to being loved that they're almost indistinguishable. Our children feel love and acceptance through us listening to them. The other thing too is that, think about it, God created us in the garden to know him and to be known by him. And some of our greatest desires as human beings is to know others and have them know us. So relationships are huge in helping our kids with too much anxiety become seers of God's truth. A great thing that can be helpful here with relationship, if your child is maybe struggling or maybe in some ways is not neurotypical, it can be really helpful to have them serve and volunteer. Serving and volunteering is a great way to have children build some relationships or at least some interactions with you're with them, with adults. Adults tend to, like, we just tend to be more supportive, especially if you have a child that's struggling with anxiety because of different peer interactions. So keep that in mind. Plus, it feels good to help other people, right? And I need you to remember that anxiety does not want them to have strong, authentic relationships. If anxiety can get them isolated and so they're just in their head and the only voice they're listening to is the anxiety in their head, that makes anxiety super happy. And we don't want that. We want other voices of truth coming into their heads and telling them truth. The final letter in seers is sleep. your kids need at least 8 to 10 hours of sleep for their brain to work well. Gotta tell you, I'm not a big fan of screens in the bedroom. If you're going to allow that, at least make sure the blue light filter is on their phones. So here's the problem with having your kids' phones or computers in their rooms is that they anxiety loop at night. And so they get up and maybe they'll look at their phone. Okay. And that's bad because of the blue light. But so anxiety wakes them up at 4 o'clock and their friend was up at 2:30. And so they answer their friend at 4 o'clock. And so they're not getting the sleep. The phone in the room is actually disruptive. And my teenagers, the teenagers I work with hate when I say this because they're like, Miss Dana, I need my phone in my room because I have to listen to my music to fall asleep. And you've told me that listening to relaxing music at bedtime is really important. And I'll say, you are right. But I bet we can find another way for you to listen to music at bedtime that is not on your phone. Right. So let's make sure our kids are getting sleep. The great thing is if they're in the sun and they're exercising and they're having great relationships and they're eating well and drinking water, you're probably going to find that they're eventually sleeping better. The other thing you want to teach your children with too much anxiety is you have to teach them to disagree, disobey, and distract. The disagree is anxiety is always lying to them. Do you remember? It says, oh, you're going to go to co-op today and nobody's going to talk to you. And then you want to sit with your child outside of the moment and come up with the truths so they can actually start to be able to tell anxiety that. So a truth in this situation, a true truth in this situation, anxiety says, ah, you're going to go to co-op tomorrow and nobody's going to talk to you. And you can teach your child to say, okay, so, you know, do people usually talk to you? Yeah. When I go into co-op, people usually talk to me. Okay. And if somebody doesn't come up to you and talk to you, what do you do? Well, I go talk to them and I talk to them. Okay. And if nobody talks to you, what's the worst thing that happened? Well, nothing's going to happen. I'll just stand over there and then I'll go to my first class. Okay. So those are the things that they need to actually tell. They need to tell anxiety. They need to disagree. And then they need to disobey. Because just remember, anxiety is saying, oh my gosh, don't go to co-op. Nobody's going to talk to you. So the disobey part is I'm going to co-op, period. I'm going to co-op. And the final thing is after they've gone through the disagree, disobey, it's time to distract themselves. And that can be a variety of things. Depending on the age of your child, you can help them with breathing. There are great breathing apps out there for all ages. They help them learn how to breathe and relax. The breathing has to be taught outside of the moment when they are not emotionally dysregulated. It is like you're going to run a 5K and you have to train for the 5K. So when the 5K comes, you're ready to run. If you just have a breathing app or your child has a breathing app and the only time they use it is when they're emotionally dysregulated, it is probably not going to help as much as if they've been using it and learning how to use it. Some kids need things to fidget. Music can be helpful. Reading can be helpful. Exercise, drawing. Some kids actually, believe it or not, like to knit. You will know what your child, you and your child can sit down and figure that out. One of the things too, another thing that can be super helpful is using your brain. So like if I'm doing a speaking engagement and I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, because sometimes I feel that way when I'm talking about something that's emotional, and I'll start doing math in my head. Because math is not easy for me. If it were easy for me, I couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. But because I have to really focus and think about it, I get into the intellectual side of my brain and I get out of the emotional side of my brain so I can finish talking. So we can teach our kids that too. Okay, so are you in a play? Practice those lines. Practice them. Are you in Awana? Practice the Bible verses. Do you know a song? Practice the song. It's anything that gets them out of that emotional side of like, remember, whatever they're thinking about, they're experiencing emotionally. The one thing about songs with teenagers will always tell me that they like to listen to songs that reflect the mood they're in at the moment. The problem is some of those songs are really dark and not really helpful. So I would just encourage you to find songs that your child like that are relaxing. And a lot of the times those are not songs with words. I understand that's probably going to be a struggle if you have a teenager, but if they're really struggling with anxiety, they don't probably need to listen to something that just exacerbates that anxiety. And again, teenagers don't like it when I say that. Another thing that can be helpful, depending on your child's age, with too much anxiety, is mood tracking apps can be super, super helpful if they're able to track themselves. There are lots of them out there. I have recommended some in the past, but I find that kids and teenagers, when they have their own phone, go find something they like different anyway. So let them tool around, or you can if you want to start tracking their moods. Let's see if there's any patterns. Is there anything that's happening? Is it a certain time of day? Is it a certain situation? Is it a certain person? So starting to track that can be helpful. With our teen girls or preteen girls, period tracking apps are great. They start to track to understand, oh, this is why I feel this way. Because remember, they're having lots of emotions and feelings from the hormones and chemicals in their bodies. And they don't understand why they feel angry or sad, but it's because the hormones in their body. And so if they can start to understand, oh, nothing is really happening right now, but this is how I feel because of my body, that can be really empowering. And some of those period tracking apps also have mood tracking apps, which are huge. Another thing with your child with too much anxiety, start teaching them, if you haven't already, that there's always differences. Part of our job is helping our kids find their gifting and the people that are going to be uplifting to them. One of the thrills, I think, there are so many bonuses and great things about homeschooling, but is being able to help our kids find that place where they shine. Kids are different. They're all different. If you have a child who's not neurotypical, you're going to know that even more clearly. And so help them figure out where they belong. It's interesting when I work with kids who go to school, even in the early elementary years, they can tell me who's in what group and who sits at what table. And they can actually tell me the names of the group. So the children are very, very, very aware of that. And our society tends to value people who are talkative and athletic or just a variety of things. And what anxiety tells our kids, especially the ones who have too much, it tells them, you don't have these things. You're not good enough. You're not good enough. You can't do that. You can't do this. It'll constantly point out to your child what they're not good at or what they can't do. Now, not in the moment when they're struggling or they're telling you their struggles. You're just listening with some time limitations. You're just listening. And out of the moment, okay, later, it can even be hours or day later, walk by them and grab them on the shoulder and look them in the eye and say, you know what? God loves you and he created you to be you for a reason. And then just give them a little squeeze and walk on. Doesn't have to be this long thing. And they may be like, oh, mom, oh, stop, dad, stop. But they hear you and they do want to hear it from you. So do it. Okay. They're listening to you too. So when to reach out for help. Okay. So when the anxiety is starting to interfere with your child's growth, it can be socially, it can be emotionally, it could be that they're limiting more and more what they're willing to do. If anxiety is running the show in your home, if you're all running around in circles trying to deal with this anxiety, it's probably time to reach out for help. When you're at your wit's end, it's probably definitely time to reach out, because you may have a moment where you're standing there thinking, I don't know what to do. Why don't I know what to do? It's okay. Dealing with kids with too much anxiety, it's hard. It is really a hard struggle. And reaching out for help is an okay thing. One of the things before you decide maybe to even consider seeking therapy is I just want you to know that in the state of Pennsylvania, children over the age of 14 and over have the right to control their mental health and their mental health information. So what I do about that in my office, and I'm telling you this as you seek maybe somehow outside help for maybe your older children, is that I have in my paperwork that I will maintain confidentiality unless there's a safety issue. If there's a safety issue, I will give them the opportunity to sit with their parent and tell them. And if they will not tell their parent, I will tell their parent in front of them. And has that meant that there have been some angry teenagers who've stormed out of my office? Yep. Have they not come back to my office? Some of them. Yep, that's true. But the most important thing really needs to be the safety and well-being of the child, right? So you're probably thinking, okay, so I'm overwhelmed. Now, how do I find a mental health resource in my area, Dana? That's a great question. I really suggest you maybe, if you have homeschool friends, quietly, the ones you trust, ask them if they have any recommendations of who they have used or somebody that they know has used. That's a great place to start. Your family doctor can also be a really helpful resource to point you to some mental health resources. You attend church, ask your pastor. And if your church has a care ministry leader, you could ask them. If there's a therapist in your church and maybe you don't feel comfortable going to that therapist, that's fine. Go ask that therapist who they would send their family members to in the community. One of the places I spoke, somebody asked me, well, what do I do to make sure I have a Christian therapist? And I said, well, if that's really important to you and you know the person has the skills you need, ask them. Just straight up ask them, hey, my faith is really important to me. It says here that your faith is important to you. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, died and was rose again for your sins, and he is the way to salvation? I know some people are like, oh my gosh, Dana, that's kind of really weird. But if that's what you want to know, then ask it. Be direct. The other places you can go, Psychology Today on the internet will list, they have a great listing of therapists by area. There is an APA, American Psychological Association, has lists. Therapist Locator Online has lists. And the American Association of Christian Counselors also has lists that you can tap into. And before I wrap up, I just want to tell you there's some great books out there. One of my favorite is What to Do When You Worry Too Much. It's an excellent book, and it's for children, okay? And I actually give it to teens and adults because I think it does a really great way of turning a whole bunch of psychobabble and deep, deep words into like understandable thoughts. So thank you for joining me today. I'm just going to be praying that God brings to mind the things that I've said that you need to hear, and that he blesses you and your family on this journey. Thanks.